This is the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Portland. Thanks so much to our new members, as well as those of you who are renewing your memberships this morning. I'm Jan Hawken, talking with Mike Snedeker by phone today. Mike, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Well, in addition to your steady and smart work here on the Old Mole and as a KBOO volunteer, you have a job as an appellate lawyer working on death penalty appeals, primarily in California. California has the largest death row number of inmates on death row in the country, with more than 660 prisoners, yet it executes very few people. Over 80% of executions are in the South. Well, on November 8th, California's people will vote on two competing initiatives about the death penalty, Proposition 62, which would repeal capital punishment and replace the death penalty with life without parole. Proposition 66 would retain the death penalty and streamline the appeal process in capital cases. Well, first, let's talk about this puzzling pattern in California, as well as the relationship between capital cases and life without parole, and then perhaps turn to whether Proposition 62 is really a step forward with respect to criminal justice reform. First, enlighten us about these numbers that there are. Over double the number of people on death row in California compared to Texas, that executes a staggering number.
Well, California has become the new death belt for Southern California, with Riverside County as the buckle. In the last year, there were more people sentenced to death in Riverside County than in Texas, Louisiana, and Alabama combined. The death penalty has made a retreat in the Deep South, mainly for fiscal reasons and mainly because crime and punishment is no longer the number one issue for politicians anywhere in the country. But what we see is a demonstration of how arbitrary the death penalty is. In Riverside County, there's a new DA, and he obtained 7 death penalty convictions in the first half of 1950. The BBC even did a documentary on it. That was more than the entire Deep South during that time span. And if you look at where death penalty convictions come from, it's dependent on prosecutors. And Houston, Texas was the major source of death penalty convictions, Harris County, until one particular prosecutor lost an election and the number of prosecutions dropped to 0. And you can see the most ambitious prosecutors also have the most wrongful convictions. Just last month, Roger King died in Philadelphia. He had obtained 7 death penalty convictions, and all of them, nobody's been executed yet because they were all bad. By bad, I mean he suppressed evidence showing that an eyewitness had identified a tall and light-skinned perpetrator rather than the short, dark person who was actually convicted. The Brady errors, or that is, failures to turn over to the defense exculpatory evidence, was a matter of work. That was his style. It was a routine. There are people who are so ambitious that they cut corners, they fail to comply with the law, and they get more convictions that way. And when they leave, for whatever reason, the number of prosecutions drops, the number of convictions drops. So I think, I could say that Los Angeles, San Bernardino, Kern County, and Riverside, they're very different culturally. Los Angeles has an excuse of having more than 10 million people, but those are the places where people have been convicted.
So one response to the power of prosecutors is to rein in that power. Another is to beef up the defense and resources that go to defense. And yet another is to use this to once again show the arbitrariness and systematic discrimination accompanying capital punishment. How would you respond to this in terms of meaningful reform?
Those are both good ideas. Riverside County is miserably underfunded. The public defender's office, private counsel there, very rarely know what they're doing. They do a bad job. L.A. County, they're smarter and more capable, but they are overwhelmed with the numbers of prosecutions. It was very difficult. If there were equal, or not even equal, but reasonable funding for the defense bar, it would help a lot.
So let's talk about this alternative, life without possibility of parole or life without parole, LWOP, as it's called, and whether this is really a step forward. Many of the surveys that show quite dramatic drops in support for capital punishment in this country also suggest that people are more apt to support life sentences or life without parole. And indeed, that this is built in as an option, as the alternative to the death penalty in Proposition 62. What can you first explain what that means? And some of this is cost. If you read the millions of dollars on each case it's spent on a capital case, it's staggering in millions of dollars. So one argument is this is too expensive. And so there's the economic argument, which I think is always problematic to tally progress through that metric. But could you first explain this option other than the cheaper route? What's involved from your perspective as an appellate lawyer in cases that lead to life without the possibility of parole?
Well, life and death are very different things. They're qualitatively different. And I think that so long as you're alive, something can happen internally within you or externally in the larger society.
But almost no one ever is pardoned who's sentenced with life without parole, from what I understand.
Well, I'm saying that death penalty is definitely worse, but it does suck all the air out of the room. And we have a sorry state now where the idea of a sentence of life in prison without possibility of parole is regarded as the humane alternative. But I don't think we'll be able to confront what that really means until the death penalty is abolished.
And why is that? When you say it sucks all the air out of the room, can you say more what you mean by that?
Well, whether or not we can kill somebody, there's so many philosophical issues raised about the power of the state and the whole issue of super due process. If death penalty cases are phenomenally expensive, but where they're not expensive, they kill innocent people because crime and punishment is government work, and there are mistakes made. The police make routine mistakes. On law and order, they're competent. They're kind of the soul of the nation. They are always morally correct, even if they overstep. They're smart. They're quick. That's not real life. Real life is riddled with errors, with overly ambitious, competitive DAs and cops, people who don't care, and other people who are just dense. Other people who are supposedly scientists are stupid. And
so this Proposition 6...
They're good people. So that means that there's going to be mistakes made, and with the death penalty, you can't fix them. The person is dead. So if you have the only way to do a death penalty system at all is with some kind of super due process where you spend more time and more money. But if you don't, so the economic argument is a recognition of the fact that death penalty is something that is irrevocable.
And this Proposition 66 plays on that concern about the costliness of death penalty appeals and proposes to streamline the appeal process in capital cases. What about that streamlining?
It's a whole farce, both these measures in California, because the way it's set up is there can be a majority of people vote against the death penalty. Because you can vote on both these propositions, many people who don't like the death penalty will also vote for the one that says it's going to speed things up, because who wouldn't want a faster system? So you could have a scenario where no on death gets 52% of the vote, but the speed-up measure, which will, like all speed-up measures, slow everything down, could get 56% of the ballot, and it would then prevail. And it is a very wacky system. It demolishes death row. It moves people to counties. It has a kind of a slavery system where no lawyers will be able to get court of appeal appointments unless they take death penalty cases. So you will have people suddenly with lawyers, but with lawyers who have never done a death penalty case and have no clue what's going on. So whatever happens in the outcome will be appealed. It's just going to be a sloggy mess.
So just returning in our last few minutes to this sentence of life without possibility of parole, you're saying that that is the inhumanity of that must be addressed, but it gets so overtaken with the issues with the death penalty that it's very difficult to really address the suffering associated with that. Can you say a bit about that sentence and what that's like for people? Just we have just a few more seconds.
Well, you're living in a room the size of a ping pong table for your whole life. It's inhumane. It's a horrible sentence. It could never be in effect. I think when people say the psychology of it, there are people who manage to sort of surmount that with their own psychology, but most people are crushed by it and immiserated. And I think the real psychology of it, though, has got to be and can only be addressed in depth after we get rid of the death penalty.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Mike, for your good work on around prisoners' rights and working around death penalty appeals, and also your fabulous work here on the Old Mole, where we routinely talk about the left in the law and stories you don't hear covered on the everyday mainstream corporate news.